Yeah, hi, this is Dan from The Feeling.
And I'm Richard, also from The Feeling.
Now, what took you so long to come back?
Yes, that's a good question. Well, we left our record label. We were with Universal Records, and we kind of went through quite a lot with them and decided that, well, you know, it was basically a matter of just not wanting to carry on the way we were. So we left our, and we basically made this record independently on our own, just locked away in our studio. It's been a while since we've been obviously here in Germany, because it was our second album that was released here, and then the third album didn't actually get released in Germany. So we actually missed that album out, and we got straight into our fourth album. So that's probably why it's been so long, isn't it? Because we've kind of been here for the last record. But as far as we were concerned, we just carried on doing it. And we do engineer and write and record and produce everything ourselves. So it does take a little bit longer, I suppose. But
it's mainly the reason we haven't been to Germany, though, is circumstantial, because Universal brought us here a lot on our first album. And we loved coming here. But we kind of lost that support. So by the third album, we weren't a priority anymore. And the whole thing became a bit painful, to be honest with you. And so we were sort of glad to leave when we did. As Dan said, we made our fourth album totally independently in our own studio, and really did it just for the love of it again. You know, there was nobody telling us to do it. There was no pressure from anyone. And at the end of the year, we approached a few companies, and BMG, who happened to be a German company, offered to put our album out. So that was very exciting to us, because that obviously meant we could also come back here.
I mean, one of the things that are very obvious on this album, it's less overproduced than the second one, for example.
Mm. Well, yeah. I think there's two really important things. Firstly, with us, it's always been about the songs at the core. Our second album, we rushed, and we did on a wave of overconfidence, and we brought loads of instruments. So you're right in saying we put the orchestras, we put everything but the kitchen sink and the kitchen sink on that.
The worst thing about that was that it was the bit at the end was the most rushed bit, and we do have a habit of trying loads of stuff out. But then what happens is there's a process that you need in order to, which is essentially, when you start mixing, you start pulling things out, you know, you start to remove things and you see what works. We never really got that far.
I think there's an element of that, but I think it was also that we lost our way a little bit, because we were, you know, our first album had done so well, and we'd spent two and a half years touring and promoting all over the world, that we lost our heads a little bit as well. And actually, some of the songs on our second album, like Without You, is one of my favourite songs that we've done. And with the third album, it was a similar story, only it wasn't rushed. It took us a long time to do it, but we just had so much pressure and so many voices and so many opinions about the songs, and we delivered so many songs that by the end of the process, we'd lost sight of what it was we were trying to do with the record. Even though there's some songs, like on that album, a song called Leave Me Out of It is one of my favourite songs that we've done.
Absolutely.
But this new album, it was just us again. And it very much was a cathartic time for the band. Dan was writing very personal stuff that really tied in with the way we were all feeling as a band professionally, being in a new place and having kind of left our last label. So it just became fun again, and we found that again, and we were able to make a consistent record. And also, when we signed to BMG, they didn't ask us to change one note. They let us put it out exactly as we wanted it.
I like the fact this album lyrically it kind of plays with two things. One is like a lost home, lost relationship, but then it's a new start. And I think all the songs, they start on a very, very sad note, and then they go up in this wonderful triumphant crescendo. Was that an intention of yours?
It was just, I suppose, what was happening to me. You know, you go through a real gamut of emotions when you leave a relationship, particularly a long-term relationship. And, you know, it starts off with kind of sorrow and loss and you know, you feel very sorry for yourself. But then you're also filled with, you know, feelings of joy for the future and hope for the future and relief as well. And sometimes you feel you know, upset, but sometimes you feel, and actually you can feel these emotions at the same time, and there aren't really words for that kind of melancholic thing where you can be kind of half devastated and half excited. And to actually, language isn't really great at expressing those things, but what is music. And we can do that musically, especially if you have a sad lyric, but then a triumphant piece of music, it can express both of those things at the same time, which is kind of a unique thing about music.
It's just very honest, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. It was what Dan was going through in his personal life, but as a band as well, we were kind of mirroring that in our professional lives. And so the music felt like a very emotional kind of, what was the word you said earlier, Dan? The outlet. That was it. The word. It was a good outlet for all of us, really.
I didn't like the word outlet because when I said it, it sounded like somewhere you could get like a discount sofa or something. Yeah.
Get 2 for 1.
That's right, 2 for 1, your outlet store. But no, it's a, you know, music's always been a great outlet for me. As you know, it's the only time I really get to express myself properly. I'm not so good at doing it most of the time, and when I can do it in songs, it's great. And this was a time when I needed to write, you know, and actually I think we needed to make this record to survive as a band. You know, we needed a chance to really show the world in a way what we're like when it's just us, and to show ourselves more than anything, actually. We really showed ourselves who we are as a band when we're left alone to our own devices.
We very much, I'd say, rediscovered ourselves as a band in that sense. Yeah. It's the same way we felt when we made 12 Stops and Home. It was just us in a room together making music for no other reason than the love of doing that. And then at the end of that process, to find a label that were willing to just release that has been an absolute privilege, really, and a real joy. We're really enjoying all of this, being able to go and tour around again and show it to people.
You kind of create earworms, always did. Like, I remember You Fill My Little World. It's got these really great memories of you guys playing at the Hurricane Festival in 2006. Mm-hmm. And I was there with BFBS, Forces Radio, and we were there with our camper van. Mm-hmm. And on the second day, I think that you had already gone then, it stormed like hell.
Yeah, but we went to a different festival.
Yeah, you went to Southside the next day.
There was a hurricane in Southside.
There was a hurricane in Hurricane Festival, which is wonderful. The Southside Festival was so windy that the screens at the side of the stage kind of came loose, and they had to, the whole stage roof blew off, and it was kind of insane. The whole place was falling apart. I remember seeing this big screen hanging over the audience, about to kill everyone. Scary. It was really scary. It was a proper storm, wasn't it?
Yeah, and the same happened in a hurricane. I'll tell you one thing, we were huddled in our camper van, the six of us, or seven of the whole team of people that were there from the radio station, British Forces Radio, and outside our plastic garden chairs were being thrown around by the wind, and we really were, and Muse had to stop their performance. Oh. It was completely crazy. And then we were there thinking, oh, we might not survive this. And all we did was raising our bottles and glasses going, you fill my little world right up.
Oh, lovely.
Hopefully that's a happy memory, not a traumatic one.
What's true about that show in Manchester I've heard of, where you were doing some crazy moonwalking on the tour bus?
Was I? Goodness knows. Yeah, no, we got to an awful lot on tour. I don't know if that was that last tour we just did. No idea. But yeah, we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. We love touring, and this last tour we did was so much fun because I suppose the record is... And you know, we went back to basics when we made this record. We went back to just guitars, piano, and bass and drums, and it made it actually really easy to tour with, because we didn't have to add too much. You know what I mean? It was just basically, it's just us playing the songs.
Everyone you speak to these days is like, oh, you know what, the rock and roll era is dead. But you kind of still have fun, like, on tour. Do you think differently, or do you think, well, it's our life and we should enjoy it, or...
I think that rock and roll's coming back anyway. I think it's going to be making a return soon, because that's what things do. They go in these cycles, you know, and I don't believe that anything will ever go out of fashion like that much, not a thing like rock and roll, do you know what I mean? And we just go in phases. We always have. you know, I remember when pop was around and it was all Spice Girls everywhere, and this was all before, you know what I mean? This is in the 90s, before the kind of indie era struck again, you know, and it goes in those cycles all the time. And I think we're about to see another one coming, and we'll be one of those old bands that was around the time before, and you know, people will be, you know, younger bands will be referencing us, you know. It's kind of funny.
We could still drink them all under the table though.
Oh yeah, so,
you know.
I think those young whippersnappers. Yeah. I think
I need to go on tour with the two of you. I think that might be quite interesting. Okay, quite good fun, this.
It wouldn't be good for your health, but it'd be
built up a very high tolerance over the years. That's the problem.
Where did the idea for the collaboration with Sophie Ellis Bextor come from? I mean, obviously, she's your wife, Richard, but was that the only reason, or, you know?
It was a song, really, because I think she's obviously been she's been my wife the whole time we've been a band. So we could have if we wanted to do have a song with her, have a sing on an album, that could have happened at any point.
That's what I mean.
But it was Dan had written this song, and actually initially he didn't even intend it to be a duet. He just wrote it, but it kind of made more sense as a song as a duet. Mm-hmm. And then we started messing around with some production, and Dan had this old Kwai keyboard and he's had for years and years, and it had this synth string sound, and we thought it sounded kind of interesting, a bit different. And when we started working on the rhythms and everything else, it just suddenly felt like this would work so well with Sophie's voice. It's a real crossover between what we do and what she does. And so, yeah, it was a very easy conversation. I mean, a cup of tea, said, can you come and sing on this? And she did, and it sounded perfect immediately.
Does that, I mean, because I know what it's like when you're on tour and all that, and she's doing her own thing. Do you interfere in each other's work?
There's a fine line between, is it interfering or influencing?
Yeah.
Or, you know, but
or
yeah.
Inspiring.
Inspiring.
Yeah.
It's a fine line, and I'd probably all of them. All of those, yeah, and you can't help it. I think, you know, with a, when you're with somebody and you're that close to them, and we both do the same, we're both in music, so obviously we play each other's stuff when we've got new demos, and it does affect you when somebody, you know, that you respect and has comments, but I think for the most part it's been very positive.
I also think when the album comes out in the UK, everyone will be asking you about that, because like she's on Strictly Come Dancing and you're there every time, so
I actually thought for a minute I might get through a day without being asked about that. Yeah, but you came along right at the end, and what time is it? It's 5:45, and we've already done about 8 interviews, and I was quite looking forward to telling her, and now you've ruined it. I get so nervous watching her, and it kind of overwhelmed me. I didn't realise how it would make me feel, but she's doing so well, and it is amazing. I'm very proud of her, but it's just very intense, the whole thing. You know, she's been doing it for 11 weeks plus another 3 weeks of trainings. It's months
crazy.
Of this. Yeah.
Back to the music. One of my favourite songs is You'll See, because it's so personal. Weren't you afraid to, like, share everything with us, like, burst your heart out to us? Like, weren't you nervous about that?
Well, I suppose so, but with the first album... I was fairly honest on that record, but I just didn't think anyone would ever hear it because it was before we had a record deal. And then with this new album, again, we weren't even sure we were ever going to release this album. You know, we had this sense
what?
That we were... Well, because...
Well, we had no... There was no record deal, and there was no... there was no one telling us to do it, and there was no deal or money involved, so we just had to do it. But actually, with You'll See, that was the first song that Dan wrote for the album.
Brilliant.
And he wrote it right in the period when... You know, we'd just broken up with left the label, and he'd just broken up with his boyfriend. And I remember when you played it to me, you did say, "I think this is too much," and he thought it was like too depressing to put.
Once you've written it, and if it's good, you have to put it out. You've got no choice, and you have to be brave about it because it is, it's what's great about art is that you're sharing something.
Well, you can hear that it's real, and that's what I felt when Dan played it to me. And you were, at the time, not nervous about playing it, because you're never nervous about playing the songs, but I just think you felt that it was a bit too maybe a bit too much, but I've always felt like, you know, when Dan writes these songs, and that was one of them, You'll See was one of them, I just felt exactly like you said. I was like, that is really emotional, and because it's so honest, it's got a rawness to it, which is what I want to hear in a song. That's what makes a song great. I think Dan would tell you that in writing it and letting it out, that's his way of being able to kind of deal with it, you know. Yeah. It's a nice thing to be able to do.
Why did you choose Boy Cried Wolf? I mean, it's out of Blue Murder, definitely out, but what, you know, why that title for an album?
Just like the words.
We like the words, yeah. I think that it kind of summarised something. It was a feel. It's rather than it being about anything specific or conceptual, it's just there's something intriguing about that. And, you know, when we came up with the concept for the album artwork, we definitely wanted to involve a child somewhere, because we wanted that nostalgia that we feel when we watch, you know, E.T. and Close Encounters and those 80s movies. So it just all kind of seemed to tie in. And it being obviously the line from the first song on the album, it made it feel complete.
What's your favourite children's movie then?
Well, E.T. is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I think it's like E.T.'s like the best.
It's all those movies we grew up with, which now, whenever we see them, like the whole aesthetic and the whole, even just the grade of the way the film looks, makes us feel really nostalgic.
Absolutely.
You know, because it was all our childhood, all of that. But it's, you know, E.T. and the Goonies and Close Encounters and Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Never-ending Story.
Never-ending Story.
I love that film.
I think I had quite a crush on the princess in that as well when I was a little boy.
So and yeah. I had a really huge crush on Atreyu.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course. Oh. Yeah.
we in many ways, were informed musically by the movies we saw.
True.
You know, the movies of those generations had great pop soundtracks.
Yeah.
You know, listen to, you know, Lost Boys soundtrack or something like that. It's awesome. It was echoing the Bunny Men songs. And we felt like we wanted to, in the production of this, if we were going to push the band sound anything further on than what it was, we wanted to give it a very subtle kind of
coming out like that, didn't it?
Kind of thing. You know, there was definitely something. Yeah, it did. Especially You'll See, actually. It kind of...
There's something that felt like it could be on one of those movies, something in there. And we never really do it intentionally, because whenever we start song or production, we don't have a plan, we just start making it. And that one, and a couple of the others as well, started to come out with this feel that could have fit on the soundtrack to one of those movies.
Absolutely.
And that definitely informed why we went that way with all the aesthetic and the artwork, the videos, everything.
Well, you know, Bowie used to be obsessed with that kind of. But you know, but there's something. He references it. He talks about it in most of his albums. There's always a reference to movies, and even if it was like back in the days of 5 years, and I felt like an actor, and he's definitely referencing like being in films and being in movies and feeling like you're in a movie and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's clearly got that hugely strongly aesthetically driven influence on his music, and. It's a kind of part of kind of rock and roll history.
It's part of making a record. All the great albums that I love, they all have an aesthetic that really fits with the music and also adds to the music. And whether it's the album cover, the videos, when bands get it right, and some they don't always. There's some great albums which don't do this, but when bands get it right, or artists get it right, and then you just get this thread that runs through the whole thing, whether it's the videos or the artwork or the T-shirts, and it all feels like it's all coming from the same place, and it really adds another dimension to the way you listen to the music. So we've always found that inspiring. We've actually found with Universal it became quite difficult to get that across sometimes, because there was always a commercial agenda where it would be, you have to have the band name on the cover, they always were trying to get us to be on the cover, but we never did. So it all ended up being a little bit of a compromise. Whereas with this record, we didn't have to compromise anything. So we got to actually make the aesthetic tie in exactly as we wanted to. I think the kind of music we make only works if it's really honest and it's really coming from us. Otherwise, it all gets a bit muddled and it doesn't really have the same kind of honesty. It's actually a total cliche. You know, a lot of the bands of our era, whether that be, you know, the Kooks or the Magic Numbers or the list goes on and on, who are all in the charts, they all had pretty much the same result. You know, it's pretty... Well, they're all going through similar things to us, where they've had that same situation. It's just we've, at the moment, we've been very fortunate in that we've, you know, made another album that's got this deal with BMG, and we've been able to kind of enjoy this experience of putting it out. Very much what Dan was saying earlier, it's a cyclical thing. It will come back round again. Just the charts, radio, everything in the UK moved back to pop and dance music, R&B. But that will change again. It always does.
So what's next then? I mean, are we going to see you on tour doing the tour moonwalk or something at some point?
Yeah, the album's out in February here, and then we plan to come back, and we were definitely going to come back and do a little bit of work before that in January. And then we plan to come and do a proper tour over here. So that'll be probably March or something. So you can kind of look out for us in the spring.